Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson here, your host, also a father of five, raising our children out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado, where we homeschool our children, trying to renew a sense of truth and relationships in a lost and lonely world. Folks, things have changed dramatically in the last 100 years. 40% of kids born without fathers, up from 6% in 1960. But at the same time, you've got the Christian family falling apart at the seams. 80% of Christian kids leaving the home after a year or two out of the home because the faith was never really rooted in their lives. Folks, things falling apart, and I think it's because of basic social problems. We are seeing unraveling of the very social fabric of our lives because we have misprioritized the way that we live our lives. Thus, on this program, we continually encourage families to reprioritize things. Reconsider the way you are constructing the social fabric of your lives. And Laura Ingalls Wilder, by the way, in the first part of the 20th century, was complaining about the expansion of farms to hundreds of acres because she said families could make a good living on 5 acres and retain a freer, happier, healthier life and reorder relationships within the family and between neighbors. But she said the more we begin to seek the materialistic lifestyle, we lose a sense of relationships. And these were the sorts of things that people were concerned about in the early part of the 20th century. But forget that. Over 100 years, the size of our homes doubled while the size of our families were cut in half. The birth rate cut in half at the same time that the square footage of homes doubled in size. And that, my friends, is the legacy of the 20th century. But we're trying to realign our priorities here. We're trying to reconstruct relationships and relational life in the 21st century. And my encouragement is that fathers get on board on this thing. Life is like weaving a mosaic in a Persian rug. It's like sculpting. You can't pull out a paints by numbers kit and call that life. You got to put life together by prioritizing things correctly and hopefully starting with the basic priorities that God has given to us in His Word. Now, I was on the corporate ladder from 1987 to 1999 for about 12 years. I worked 60-hour weeks. I was reporting to the president of a $200 million company as a manager on a number of high production lines. And I had to work the 60-hour weeks, but at some point I realized that I had to do something radical, something drastic. Came home when my oldest child was 7 years old, realized that I had to spend more time with my family and hopefully integrate my family more into my life. It's possible, dads, you're going to have to make some radical changes in your life in order to bring a biblical balance back into your life. And let me ask you this, dads. If you were to set out to make a radical change in your life in order to bring a biblical balance back into your life, do you think that, oh, God might help you take these breathtaking challenges? Do you think that God is omniscient and omnipotent enough to help you to realign your life according to His priorities? I don't know. Do you think God's good for it? Anything He might support you if you stepped out and started to realign your life according to His priorities? I don't know. What do you think? You think God's good for that? I think He is. And I'm challenging dads to faith. I think there's one reason why dads have a hard time realigning their lives, and that's because they don't trust God to sustain them through some of the changes they need to make in order to live life and to construct their families God's way. Well, in just a moment, we want to talk about The Father's Stew. There's a great little book that's come out from Stephen Beck called A Father's Stew. And we're going to talk about dad's priorities and how to construct life. How do you weave the mosaic of the rug of your life? That next on Generations. My name is Kevin Swanson.
Folks, we are in the middle of the greatest recession since World War II. Unemployment continues to rise after 22 months of recession. Will the national bailouts and the massive redistribution of the wealth into irresponsible banks really help the situation? Will John Maynard Keynes' fractional reserve indebted system work out in the long run? I mean, he didn't think it was going to work in the long run. If you're a Christian father and mother and you care about the future of your children and grandchildren, I'm telling you, it's time to work on Plan B. That's why we're doing a Family Economics Conference coming up here on March 5th and 6th, 2010. This will be a hands-on practical conference bringing biblical perspectives to bear in every area of family economics. We're talking work. We're talking family entrepreneurism, debt-free living, contractual employment, inheritance, being a faithful employee, taking care of aging parents, living without Social Security, which, by the way, will happen, saving and investments, retirement, family charity, education, mentorship, taxation, health care decisions, seeking employment, raising dominion-minded daughters. We have found the best speakers in America who have studied and written on biblical family economics. It's time to work on Plan B, my friends. If you have a family and you are living in the American economy today, you need to check out this Family Economics Conference on March 5th and 6th, 2010. Check it out at kevinswanson.com. That's kevinswanson.com. Check it out now. Back on the Generations Radio broadcast, folks. This is Kevin Swanson with you. Today, talking about a father's stew. With me, Stephen Beck is the author of a great little book called A Father's Stew. The Biblical Integration of Family, Work, and Ministry. He's a father of three children. They've homeschooled out in Texas for a number of years. Stephen, welcome to the Generations broadcast, my friend.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Kevin. This is a real honor and a privilege.
Stephen, what a great little book, A Father's Stew. Now, you're talking to the hearts of fathers in this book. And as I look around, man, fathers are messing up here and there and everywhere. And if you, and this is a little bit of a strange question, but let me level it to you, because I think this is going to tie into everything we're going to say on this program. If a father is going to set out to really ruin his family, I mean, just really mess things up, Stephen, how would he do it?
Well, I think the first way he'd do it, Kevin, is just make sure that every area of his life was sealed off from everything else. When he goes to work, he seals that off and doesn't let that touch his family. When he's at home, he seals that off from work and from his ministry. When he's in ministry, he doesn't, you know, have any regard for his work or his family. He keeps everything sealed in a 55-gallon drum, really tight, and when things brew up, you know what's going to happen. It's going to explode and be a mess. So that is one of the worst things that dads can do.
Yeah. In other words, he's pulling his family away from the rest of his life, and somehow he sees these things as different. And he doesn't see them all tied together into one unified purpose. And then these are the sorts of things you talk about in your book. And I think it's really important for fathers to understand that their lives really serve one particular purpose.
Yeah, I mean, that one overarching purpose is to glorify God. And so if we feel like in our work that that's somehow, you know, not related to our ministry and our family, then we're going to run roughshod over people. We're not going to have the most ethical business dealings. We're not going to do things right at the office. And then if we expect that to happen at the office and not follow us home, we're severely misguided. So I tell dads, quit treating their lives like a TV dinner, you know, where the little steak is in one little compartment and the peas are somewhere else and the dessert and that nasty gravy in yet another compartment. You know, it's more like a stew. I mean, it's not a TV dinner. God never intended to be like that. You're supposed to mix the ingredients to be a stew, and that will have a favorable aroma to the Lord.
Mm. And ultimately, it's to serve His kingdom, and we're to glorify God in everything we're doing. Stephen, when you are on your deathbed, your face up, you've got 20 seconds to go, and you're looking over the extent of your entire life, what do you want to say about your life at that point?
Wow, that's a great question. First and foremost, I want to say that I loved God, that He was a man who loved God, and people knew that.
Yeah.
And secondly, that I love my children. I wasn't perfect, but I had a sense of humor. I had a sense of humility that I was just kind of a fellow traveler with my children, and that I gave it my all. That I didn't have the wrong priorities. That's the main thing. I want to have the right priorities when I close my eyes. Not do everything perfect, but at least have the right priorities.
And you're not counting the square foot of your house, and you're not counting the toys because you aren't taking any of those toys with you.
No, I'm not.
That's the way most people live their lives, though. We're not kidding here. People are really working hard for that extra car, the extra 2,000 square feet, and that's really what drives them and drives them. It's a materialistic age, Stephen.
Yes, it sure is.
And what are all those materials for? Yeah, what's the purpose of these things?
Yes. Are you blessing other people? Are you having people in your home? But are you using those material possessions to bless other people and to send other people, you know, as missionaries into foreign lands and, you know, local missionaries as well?
Well, you talk about God's priorities. You say God has priorities for our lives. How do we get our priorities out of whack?
Well, I think here's part of the problem. We look at everything through our own lens. We tend to look at the Bible through our own filters. And so if, let's say, if I have the gift of evangelism, then I want everyone to be an evangelist. And if you're not an evangelist, then all of a sudden, you know, you're a second-class citizen, whether it's education, whether it's the gifts of the Spirit. I mean, I could just go on down the list. We tend to, you know, when we're a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So what we need to do is take a step back and say, okay, what are God's priorities? First is to have a right relationship with Him. You have to accept Jesus Christ as your Savior, or none of this will really amount to anything. You don't have the power to do it without that relationship. But number two is your own relationship with God intact. How can you expect your kids to have a godly, vibrant relationship with the Lord when you don't have it yourself? And number three, obviously, would be to pour yourself into your kids and mold and shape them into the people that God wants them to be.
Stephen, let's get this down to brass tacks for the average dad out there. We've talked about the basic foundational commitments that need to be there in a father's life. But when it really comes down to it, how does a guy know whether God wants him to spend an extra half an hour discipling his children in his home each weekday morning, or get out there and work an extra 5-8 hours a week for that extra $15,000 a year? You know, how does a guy work through those priorities?
That is a good question, and I don't want to be simplistic and say, well, just have, you know, quiet times or whatever. But there is a sense in which we need to be disciplined. First, we need to have our own time with the Lord. Now, you can have that in the morning or the evening, but you need to spend some time with the Lord. And one of my tricks, if I want a habit, if I want to create a habit, I couple the thing I want to do with the thing I'm already doing. So one of my tricks for family devotions is we're all going to eat. Now, here's the one thing. If you're not sharing at least one meal together as a family, then you're missing the boat. I mean, if you're so busy that you don't have at least one meal together as a family, like, that's just a nice debriefing time. It allows the whole family to come together. Well, you're not going to go hungry. You're going to get those three meals a day. Then couple family devotion with a meal. So therefore, it's not this huge, arduous thing that you bring everybody into the living room. No. Go ahead and associate it with a meal, because you're not going to miss that meal anyway. So my principle is, if I want to add something new to my life, let's say a good habit, couple it with something I'm already doing, something that's already an ingrained habit, and it makes it 10 times easier. Plus, let's just be honest, if you look through the Bible, the biblical view of meals, there's something supernatural about meals. I can't explain it, but almost invariably, God speaks to His people through meals. The marriage supper of the Lamb, wedding feast, you know, every time an angel appeared to a patriarch, they sat down and had a meal together. So couple your family devotion with a meal, and I think that'll make it so much easier on you. The whole goal is not to make this stringent and hard. It's to incorporate what God wants you to do with things you're already doing.
Yeah, if you think about it, not many examples of people eating alone in the Bible. Elijah and the birds, I guess, is the only example I can think of. But for the most part, you have Jesus and His disciples who are eating together, and you see folks in relationship as they commune around the table, and I think that's really key. Now, as we talk to fathers, I think there are a lot of fathers out there that sort of feel themselves like pinballs in the pinball machines. Other forces are always acting upon them. The corporations are making their decisions for them. Sometimes their addictions run them. How do we deal with that problem?
Good question. I mean, work is not the problem.
Yeah.
And sometimes in homeschool circles, and we've been homeschooling a long time, we all tend to view the work as the bad guy. But it's the way in which we work. So, you know, personally, I love freedom, so I have my own business. I had a construction business, which was my own business, and I felt like, wow, that's got me pretty tied down. I want to be able to go anywhere, go on extended mission trips. I want to be able to run my business from anywhere in the world, so I started an online business. Now, I'm not advocating that everyone do that. I will advocate that I think almost every family would do well to have a little small business in addition to what they're already doing. If nothing else, then teach their children entrepreneurial skills.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, one of the messages in your book of Father Stew that I think is very important is the idea of integration. You've already mentioned that a little bit, the idea that you integrate these things. You integrate your family into your work life. I often say we're not a two-income family. We're a seven-income family. Five children. Everybody gets to work, you know. Nobody gets to sit around eating bonbons all day. You know, and of course, that's biblical. You've got Rachel feeding her father's sheep, David feeding his father's sheep, Joseph feeding his father's sheep, Aquila and Priscilla. They were tent makers. You know, throughout the scriptures, you have families working in what I would call the oikonomia. We've got to find ways to integrate. And I think that's key. That takes a lot of pressure off.
No, I couldn't agree more. You know, and a lot of people might argue, well, they had an agrarian society. You know, they had sheep, they had crops, they had whatever. But look at our world today. I mean, you know, my children are so involved in my business, meaning like right now, well, when in the younger years when we went to homeschool conventions a lot more often, well, they helped pack the van. And my kids learned to count change back. They learned how to run the computer. They learned how to do inventory. They learned to take an order, you know, ship the order, all that kind of stuff. And now as I've grown in my online business, one of my daughters handles all of my email. Another daughter handled all of my customer service. I had a son that he didn't want to, you know, just work for mom and dad. That was chicken feed. So he started a marshmallow gun business where he assembled PVC marshmallow guns, sold them by the hundreds at homeschool book fairs, and then started shipping them all over the country. I mean, it's just, if you will give them a nudge in the right direction, they will, I mean, they will just go gangbusters on you and have a lot of fun doing it. And the whole point is, you know, not to make $1 million as a family. The whole point is to give them the confidence that, hey, I can do this if I really need to, or if I need a little extra income, or if I need some homeschool supplies, I can always go out there and make a little extra money, plus it's a lot of fun.
And as you've said before, the attitude that you take to the work is very important. How do you cultivate that attitude? A lot of people find work stressful. They hate it. They complain about it. How do you get beyond that? I mean, you spend a concerted amount of space in your book on this, and I think this is really, really critical.
Well, when you look at Solomon, I mean, he hated, when you read the Song of Solomon, or I'm sorry, you read Ecclesiastes, he hated his work. And the reason he hated his work is he began to realize that he was going to die and just leave all his work to somebody else. You know, all his vanity, all for nothing. But towards the end of the book, he realizes, no, wait a minute. You know, my work is a good thing, the fruit of my hands. Just to be able to eat, drink, and enjoy the good things that God has given me. So I think, number one, it's thankfulness. And you would be amazed when you list those things and you're thankful for the things that God has given you. Your whole attitude begins to change over a few days to maybe a few weeks. That job looks a lot different to you.
And there's nothing like working your heart out over a day with your family, and then you're all starving to death. At the end of the day, you're sitting around a wonderful meal prepared by one of the family members, and, man, that is such a wonderful time where you're just enjoying the fruit of your labor and really the gift of God to you in that food, in that ministry. Let me move ahead here, because you've talked about the importance of work. Work is part of the fabric of life. We bring that in. We weave that into the fabric of the Persian rug of our lives. You've talked about a family and loving God and our neighbor as ourselves. But let's talk about ministry and discipleship. Life is discipleship, and we read that in Deuteronomy 6:7, Ephesians 6:4. Ephesians chapter 4 itself talks about the church's purpose, building up the saints for the work of the ministry. Ministry is life for us. And you talk about discipleship being basic for life. How do we do that?
Yeah, I mean, basically, we look at the model. There was a I believe his name is Ron Coleman, and I reference him in the book, A Father's Stew, and it's called The Master Plan of Evangelism. He really should have titled it Master Plan of Discipleship, because it's just a step-by-step plan of how to disciple another person, but what he does is uses Christ's life to do it. So, I mean, that is... number one book, you know, don't pass go, don't collect $200. Go get that book and read it, because he basically categorizes and models how Christ discipled his 12. And his whole thing was Christ invested so heavily in the 12 and not in the general public. I mean, he gave a little bit to them, but he invested so heavily in the 12 because he knew the 12 were going to go on and really turn the world upside down for him.
We like to ask the question from time to time, if you only had one thing you could do in all your life, either disciple three people for 10,000 hours or speak to 10,000 people about the Lord for 3 hours, which would you do? If you could only do one of those two things, which would you do in a lifetime? And more often than not, people respond, you know, hey, we really ought to go with the three people for 10,000 hours, because that sounds a lot more like the Great Commission that Christ gave us than to just, you know, throw out some words for 3 hours.
Oh, it really does. And if you look at the numbers, it's astounding. I mean, we all want to get everybody on TV, and we want to just mass media and have a bestseller and all that. And when really what it comes down to is not being an inch thick and a mile wide, but being a mile deep, you know, and just really going into a guy. And I really believe it takes about a year to 2 years to fully disciple someone, not so they're just disciples, but so that they're disciple makers.
Yes.
And one thing that I have done with large success is basically I will take a man under my wing and disciple him for about a year. And then we will say at the end of that year, say, now it's time that we each find another person. And the beauty of this is now he becomes my assistant. He starts taking over the disciple responsibilities. And then after 2 years, he is fully capable of going out and doing the same. Well, the guy he just discipled became his assistant in the next year. And then following that, he is fully capable. So, you know, if you go grab guys and pour your life into them and then grab maybe two more guys, you kind of perpetuate this discipleship aspect, and it can be a very, very powerful. I mean, you can turn your church upside down, because when we think of how many young people in our church are just screaming for an older man to, if nothing else, take them out to lunch once a week or once a month, then there's a big need to be filled.
And I think what we're saying is that the whole mega approach, the mega church, mega ministry approach to running out there and getting 300 million people converted is really not the right strategy as much as getting the 12 and discipling them over 3 years. And this is very much a bottom-up system. We're not going to accomplish this unless we can get hundreds of thousands, millions of fathers and disciples of Jesus Christ out there to go out there and start discipling the world for Christ, one at a time, two at a time, three at a time, 12 at a time. This is the strategy, and we've got to push the strategy, and I think it really does begin in the home, doesn't it?
I was just about to say that. Make sure that you're not out there discipling others, quote unquote, before you begin discipling your kids. Now, I would say do both, because I think your kids... I think your children need to look at dad, and dad is discipling someone. I mean, that's just a huge, huge model for them. In fact, I want my kids to be looking at me and say, hey, dad, you know, where's your Timothy? You know, I haven't seen one in a while, you know. And so, yes, disciple your children, and one of the best ways to do that is through the family devotions. If nothing else, couple it with a meal. But then have your children see you going out and discipling others.
Yeah, and you talk about maturity. You know, you want maturity as you disciple these young men and young women for Christ. Now, I've got 8 young men in the Shepherd Center, and they're all around us right now as we broadcast this radio program right now, Stephen. And, you know, we're trying to disciple, we're trying to shepherd. We want these young men, 16 to 19 years of age, to be mighty shepherds in the land. We want them to be fathers and leaders in their own home in 4, 5, 6 years from now. If they're going to disciple their own families in 5 or 6 years, where do they need to be? How would you define that maturity?
First of all, it's a two-pronged approach. You can't lead somebody where they don't want to go. So first of all, they have to have their own walk with the Lord. Now, you can encourage them as discipling them. You can encourage that. But then I think you can take them to the next level because, you know, a young man of 17 knows a lot, but he hasn't been through what, you know, us 40 and 50-year-olds have been through. And that's why I think, you know, there are some fundamental flaws with the way we do ministry today. And I'm not trying to point fingers, but, you know, in your average youth group where you have the 20-year-old college kid discipling the 17-year-old high schooler, you know, I think there's a fundamental flaw there because there's not a lot of life experience that you have as a 20-year-old that you don't have as a 17-year-old. It makes a lot more sense for a 30 or 40-year-old man to disciple a 17-year-old or even a 15-year-old than it does, you know, that peer-to-peer relationship. And I've seen that in college, too, in these ministries where, you know, you have a senior discipling a sophomore. I mean, it's great if that's nothing else that you have, but I think we as men in the church need to step up and say, hey, there's a huge lack of leadership, a huge lack of discipleship. The older men in the church need to step up. And some of that means, you know, you may not pursue your career as hard as you would like to. There are just some sacrifices that the older men in the church need to make in order to make sure that these young men are discipled. And that discipleship takes a whole variety of things. You're discipling them about their walk with Jesus. You're discipling them about their future family coming up. You're discipling them about how they should behave and work. If you have your own business or if you have a ministry like you have, Kevin, you involve them in that. So a big part of discipleship is involving them in the things you're already doing. Again, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. You know, I love to shoot shotguns, and I used to be a competitive pistol shooter. Where do you think I take most of my guys?
Yeah.
Out to the range. Right. Let's shoot. Well, it's a 30-minute drive out to my property to shoot at my berm. I've got an hour with them.
Yeah.
30 minutes up, 30 minutes back. I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. I'm trying to have fun and discipleship at the same time. And that's what I'm advocating here.
And the key word, my friends, is integration. And you need to get a copy of the book, A Father Stew, The Biblical Integration of Family, Work, and Ministry. It's just one big old mixed up stew, but in the end, it's a beautiful, beautiful fabric woven into a wonderful Persian rug that constitutes a life that hopefully is lived for the glory of God and the extension of the kingdom of Jesus Christ. And that's the vision conveyed in Stephen Beck's book, A Father Stew. In just a moment, I'm going to tell you where you can get a copy of that book. But first, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us on Generations.
Hey, thanks for having me here. I like nothing more than to just kind of, let's just be honest, rattle men's cages, get them to think about things they might not have otherwise thought of. And my whole point is, if God's going to hold you accountable for your children's spiritual welfare, you might as well do the job right. You're going to be held accountable one way or the other.
Yeah.
You might as well hear, well done, good and faithful servant.
And you only live once. You only get to do it once. Now, a lot of us would like a practice session on this one, but you only get one shot at it, and make it a good shot. And I think A Father Stew would be a wonderful way to get a little bit of a clue on how to take that shot. Thanks, Stephen, for your work. Appreciate you.
Thanks so much.
Again, folks, that book that I'd like to recommend to you is A Father Stew, The Biblical Integration of Family, Work, and Ministry. A wonderful little resource. Not a long book. It's got a beautiful cover and great content. And I encourage you to grab a copy of the book of Father Stew by just simply calling us at 877-842-2432. Again, toll free, 877-842-2432. for a copy of A Father's Stew. Folks, you have been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast. You can interact with the show by emailing me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.